From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, space and science with none other than Richard C. Hoagland. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. Well, I'm glad I'm not on a flight going to Los Angeles. I probably wouldn't get there tonight. Powerful winds wreaked havoc at the Los Angeles International Airport Wednesday night, forcing at least 20 flights to be diverted and others to be put in holding patterns. And that's not fun if you've ever been in one. The wind gusts have hit now more than 40 knots, creating severe crosswinds for planes taking off and landing. Pilots hate that. The diverted flights were sent to Ontario International Airport in California. Recalls of two holiday foods on the night before Thanksgiving, the most festive centric celebration of the year, are raising eyebrows about the way some companies now notify consumers about problems. Of course, how are they going to do that late in the moment? Ocean Spray, a top cranberry producer, recalled certain lots of packaged and bulk craisins. Now, that's the sweetened dried fruit, because they may have been contaminated with hair-like metal fragments. And Giant Eagle, which is a Pittsburgh-based grocery chain, also recalled all Value Time brand canned pumpkin purchased on or after August 30th, 2011, and all Food Club brand canned pumpkin purchased on or after October 28th of 2011 because of imperfections in canned packaging. Both recalls were launched on Wednesday evening, right before Thanksgiving, just as families across America were finalizing menus and finishing shopping for their holiday feasts. They don't say, of course, what the dangers are of these recalled foods, but there's no way they're going to notify you at that late moment. Britain shut Iran's embassy in London and expelled all of its staff, saying that the storming of the British mission in Tehran could not have taken place without the consent from Iranian authorities. The Foreign Secretary of Britain said that the embassy in Tehran had been closed and all staff evacuated following the attack by a crowd that ransacked offices and burned British flags and a protest over sanctions imposed by Britain on Tehran. In a moment, Jerome Corsi joins us. We're going to get more on this story. As we reported last night in Los Angeles, police say now more than 200 people were arrested during a raid of the Occupy Los Angeles encampment. Police Chief Charlie Beck said at a news conference that the arrests were mainly peaceful and that there were no injuries. Stocks exploded today, rallying sharply to finish at their best levels after global central banks announced a plan to support the global financial system. A handful of better-than-expected economic reports in China saying that it would loosen monetary policy. Ms. Shedlock on with us here, registered investment advisor. Well, there's a little bit of good news here for a change, don't you think?
Is it good news, or is it bad news that caused the central banks to do what they did? I'm saying it's the latter. We had two things happen. I'm hoping you give me an extra minute because I want to talk about something that Secretary Paulson did when he was under Bush. But today, China cut the reserve ratios by a half a point. But is it really going to mean that much to go from 21.5% to 21%? Meanwhile, the Central Bank of the United States, the Fed, cut swap lines to Europe. Now, the interesting story that you're not hearing in the news is that banks can go to the Fed in Europe and borrow money from the Fed at a half a point interest. In the United States, if they want to do that through the discount window, it's 0.75%.
Jeez.
So what I'm telling you, George, and people don't know, is the Fed is loaning money to distressed European banks at a cheaper rate than right here in the United States.
And it's all paper money, Mish, isn't it? There's nothing behind it.
There is absolutely nothing behind this. The interesting thing about this is on September 15th, they made the same announcement. All this is a repeat of the same announcement. I
see.
When you
this
do
what,
it the second time, it works.
Mish, this is what I don't understand. If you created money out of nothing, if I created money out of nothing, they'd take us away. How can they do this?
They would take us away, and they do take people away attempting to do this. it's maddening. But, you know, as maddening as this is, the thing that really has my ire was this story that broke a couple of days ago, and actually I talked about it on my blog. Both the LA Times and National Public Radio, you know, picked up my commentary on it. But Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, before Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac imploded, remember when they price plunged from $14 to $1 like overnight? Henry Paulson tipped off prominent hedge funds, all ex-Goldman Sachs ties, almost all, you know, there were a few other people in there. He told them that the share prices of Fannie Mae and even preferred shareholders of Fannie Mae stocks would see their equity wiped out. He told them, you know, material news to these hedge funds. One hedge fund, you know, came out and said, this is what happened. This is what happened at the meeting. Who was there at the meeting? Of course, all the rest of them were, you know, denying that Paulson said anything. But, you know, good Lord, meanwhile, Paulson is telling banks, reporters, everyone else, the common public, you know, don't worry, Fannie and Freddie are sound. So they're herding all the investors in here into Fannie and Freddie shares so that these hedge funds, ex-Goldman Sachs, can dump all their Fannie and Freddie shares.
It sounds like inside training. Inside training, Mitch. That's what it sounds like to me. Thanks so much. You know, for most people, an extended stay aboard a luxury cruiser liner sounds like a dream vacation, doesn't it? But for Valeska Paris, she says she was held against her will aboard the Scientology cruise ship Free Winds for more than a decade. During her stay on the vessel, she alleges that she was forced into hard labor and never allowed to leave the ship without an escort for more than a decade. The Church of Scientology denies this. Well, thanks to a Freedom of Information Act request, the National Security Agency has declassified an apparent report from 1957 saying that 29 mysterious signals were received and verified as being of extraterrestrial origin. On the Before It's News website, Terrence Ayn writes that the NSA specialist named Dr. Howard Champagne is given the responsibility of choosing a cryptology team to work on cracking the alien message. Some people say the document has been dismissed as an exercise, but the details were never released. We're going to try to get to the bottom of that story. Up next, we're going to try to get to the bottom of what's going on in Iran. Jerry Corsi joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. In this hour, Dr. Jerome Corsi joins us. Of course, he received a PhD from Harvard University in political science. He's written a number of books, including, of course, Atomic Iran and Showdown with Nuclear Iran. And I want Jerry on with us this hour to talk about things that are going on. First of all, Jerry, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great, George. Great to be back with you. Thank you.
I'm beginning to think, and this is my theory, and hear me out for a moment, that this embassy raid in Britain that was in Iran is a ruse. And the reason I say that is this. If there's going to be an imminent attack on Iran, I would think that the Brits would want, because we're not there and the Israelis aren't there, that the Brits would probably want to get their people out of there. Now, they can't bring them out of there before the attack, because then everyone would think, hey, there's something going on here. So they create this ransacked of offices, burning of British flags, and they say, well, we're bringing you all out of there. What do you think?
Well, it's a very interesting theory, George, and I think it's possible, quite possible. I mean, this could be a coordinated move by Britain knowing that there's going to be an attack imminent and wanting to clear their personnel out of Iran before the attack, like you suggest. At a minimum, it's a complete deterioration of relationships between Great Britain and Iran at a time when the crisis in Iran is building every day. We've also got the similar pressure going on in the United States. It's hard to know exactly where the Obama administration is, but remember, we've got this Kirk Amendment, which is in the current defense authorization bill, which would impose pretty much crippling sanctions on Iran financial system by cutting off the central bank of Iran. This is an amendment proposed by Senators Mark Kirk, who's a Republican of Illinois, and Charles Schumer, who's a Democrat in New York. And it's an attempt to pressure the Obama administration to take severe financial sanctions on Iran. And Iran is going to see that as extremely provocative, which is another step. Great Britain was also on board with imposing sanctions on the Central Bank of Iran. The Central Bank of Iran handles all of Iran's oil transactions. And if sanctions were put on that bank, it would essentially put a stranglehold on the economy of Iran. And that's why Iran is seeing this as a provocation by Great Britain and the United States, and the kind of provocation that is typically a prelude to war.
Absolutely. And part of the timetable, I think, is they want the European Union shored up first. They want to take care of these European banks and all these trouble spots. Once that's cleaned up, and they're working on that, and now that they're pulling out of, the Brits are pulling out of Iran, I think it's imminent, Jerry. That's my guess.
Well, I think it's imminent too, George. And I also, I think the fix that was put into place today and over the last 48 hours by the Federal Reserve with the European Union is not it's doomed not to succeed. I mean, there's one other way of looking at this entire situation, which is, you know, the European Union, the globalists are saying that the only solution is a fiscal union. In other words, more globalism, in which the bureaucrats in Luxembourg and Brussels would determine for each of the countries of the EU what their national budgets could be. In other words, Italy, Greece, maybe Portugal, Spain would lose control of their ability in their congresses, their parliaments, to set a national budget. It would be set by the bureaucrats of the EU. And similarly, the kind of chaos that we see going on in the Middle East, I think an imminent war with Iran, I mean, I think hourly a war could break out, it will be a push for more globalism. There will be a push to say there needs to be more control by either the United Nations or, you know, some of the, or the International Atomic Energy Agency in order to, and the pressure will also be on Israel, because again, the globalists have wanted to deny Israel nuclear weapons, and Israel remains outside of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. So, you know, the chaos that's going on right now, and I continue to think how much the globalists enjoy chaos, because mm-hmm. it gives, when people feel in fear, it's an opportunity for people to relate to lay down liberties.
That's right.
And for globalists to take up power.
Why would Iran be so upset that Britain closed its embassy?
Well, I think the tension between Great Britain and Iran is back and forth. I mean, you have the expelling of the diplomat, the ambassador. Iran first said the ambassador, the newly appointed ambassador from Great Britain, had to leave Iran. They wouldn't accept him. That was after Great Britain imposed these first sanctions on the Central Bank of Iran. Great Britain led the United States in this. You know, the Obama administration is not yet entirely on board with these sanctions on the Iran Central Bank. You've got tensions within the Obama administration. Some of the top State Department officials are actually lobbying against the Kirk Amendment in the Obama administration. Treasury Undersecretary David Cohen, for instance, has been leading the charge to push back the Kirk Amendment and get it out of the defense authorization bill. Obama has not, he's talked tough on Iran, but he's rarely done anything. I mean, even in June 2009, when the Green Movement was in the streets of Iran, I thought a moment that we might have had a democracy movement arise from within Iran, Barack Obama was silent. He did not support the Green Movement in the streets. And now when the U.S. Congress wants to have sanctions like Great Britain has imposed on the Central Bank of Iran, the Obama administration is hesitating, even though Congress is charging forward. I mean, in August, there was an important article by Josh Rogan, who's a foreign affairs analyst in Foreign Policy magazine. Mm-hmm. He noted that 90 U.S. senators had signed a letter to President Barack, which were demanding crippling sanctions against Iran because the time for Iran to develop a nuclear weapon is so imminent. But I myself think that these sanctions are too little too late. The Iran is not going to be stopped, but the sanctions Great Britain is imposing financially, the Central Bank of Iran, and the United States may impose, are going to be a provocation to Iran, which probably increases the likelihood of a war with Iran.
I think so, too. I mean, this is all the makings of a problem spot. Why can't we sit down with the Iranians and the Israelis and say, first of all, folks, listen, the Holocaust happened. Quit talking about blowing Israel off the face of the map. It's not going to happen. Let's work this thing out. I'm not concerned with the Iranians having missiles because they're traceable. They're trackable. We know who launches any place on this planet. I'm concerned that they'll get nuclear technology and give it to, you know, Al-Qaeda or other terrorist groups.
Well, there's no question that, in fact, one of the main themes when I wrote Atomic Iran in 2005 was that nuclear terrorism out of Iran is one of the major threats. Smuggling a low-yield nuclear weapon through a port in the United States, and our ports remain, again, pretty much wide open, not nearly the security we should have. This is one of the things Iran could do through a terrorist group like Al-Qaeda. I was writing about this, you know, 6 years ago. And it's the threat also from an EMP attack, an electromagnetic pulse attack, which is a nuclear weapon exploded high in the altitude over the United States, which would wipe out electrical communications, all computer and other technological communications that depend on electricity. These are threats that Iran could launch. In terms of getting and sitting and down and talking together, you know, President Obama, when he came into office, was going to have this no-holds-barred, wide-open discussion with Iran that sounded like President Obama wanted to do exactly what you were suggesting, George, but he never did it. It never occurred. In fact, President Obama was coming and putting more pressure on the Israelis to stop settlement development. And really, for the last 3 years, the argument between the Obama administration and Israel has been over the continuing settlement development, not about, you know, ratcheting down the pressures on nuclear weapons or coming to some kind of an accommodation with Iran. The focus of the Obama administration with Israel has been on the Palestinians. So the Iranians have used this time, especially with the United States pulling out of Iraq and also reducing our presence to some extent in Afghanistan, Iran sees an historic opportunity when the West is financially weak to increase their pressure with the Shiites in Iraq to move over to Iraq and gain dominance within Iraq, and Iran also now funding Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas in the Gaza, probably has never had greater pressure on Israel. It was one of the scenarios I was worried about when I wrote the short book I wrote, Why Israel Can't Wait, after I was in Israel for about a month in June 2009. At that time, when the Green Movement was in the streets, President Peres asked me if I thought Ahmadinejad would fall, and I said at the time, no, Ahmadinejad is not going to fall because he's solidly got the control of Ayatollah Khamenei. Mm-hmm. And in fact, this recent uprising, these students or activists, as it were, taking over the embassy, the British embassy in Tehran, has got to be seen as a direct message from the government of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, and also Ahmadinejad, that Iran is not going to tolerate this kind of economic pressure for long.
Well, you're absolutely right, Jerry. And I will say this again. I've said it before. As you well know, I think there's going to be an attack on those sites, hopefully just those sites, if it happens before Christmas.
Well, and George, there may already have been an attack. I've been watching pictures of this base that was attacked outside Tehran, and that base was leveled. Doesn't look like a minor explosion, and I'm suspecting that Mossad from Israel would be a major suspect as causing that explosion.
Yet the Iranians have stayed pretty quiet about this, not saying that it's done by terrorists or outside sources.
They've suggested in the press within Iran, it's been widely discussed, it has been broadcast internationally. I think Iran does not want to admit how devastating these attacks were. There was also an explosion a couple days ago
That's
at Isfahan, which is Iran's one of its major uranium enrichment facility.
Well, as you know, Jerry, there are no coincidences. We're going to come back with you. We're going to talk more and take phone calls, and perhaps you can share your views with us. With, you know, I just want to know how you feel about an imminent attack on Iran. We'll be back. Okay, you're back with Dr. Jerry Corsi. Jerry, negotiations with Iran about its nuclear program, dead, isn't it?
I think so, George. I don't think negotiations are going to do any good at all. It's amazing to me, George, but, you know, things that you and I were predicting about Iran and this coming war with Israel, we were predicting them 5 or 6 years ago, are just happening now. We were a little bit ahead of the time in seeing the future, but we're there today. I think a war is imminent, and I don't think there's anything that can be done to stop a war at this point.
No, I don't think so either, Jerry. Let's go to some calls. We're all lining up to chat with you. West of the Rockies in Gardena, California. Hello, Barbara. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. I don't see the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, the North Koreans, or anybody else except for the U.S. and its NATO allies invading other countries and setting up or installing puppet governments and killing people. So what I want to know is why I shouldn't consider the U.S. and its NATO allies to be the world's greatest terrorists.
Well, get your comments. Well, of course, the Russians have gone into Chechnya, but go ahead, Jerry.
Well, again, there's always a tendency to blame the United States. I mean, the North Koreans have been a culprit. North Koreans are right now providing nuclear technology both to Syria and to Iran. They're a client state of China. North Korea barely does anything without China's approval. I think these things are very complex, and reducing to saying the United States is the culprit is just too simplistic to be realistic.
Well, and of course, let's not forget the Russians went into Afghanistan a long time ago, too.
I mean, the destabilization of Afghanistan goes back to the 1980s, if not, you know, decades or generations before when the Russians invaded Afghanistan. It's not just the United States that has been a interferer within world politics. I mean, you can also take the conflict between Great Britain and Iran back to 1953 with Mossadegh, the Iranian prime minister that both the CIA and the British intelligence helped overthrow. At that time, the British and the United States were very opposed to Mossadegh because he had nationalized the Iranian oil industry, and both Great Britain and the United States wanted Mossadegh deposed so the oil industry could be made again a private industry. So these conflicts go back generations, and sorting out who's right and wrong in the Middle East, I've always considered to be kind of a fool's errand.
Jerry, the Chinese want Taiwan. I think that's what they're going to wait for.
Well, there's no question China is going to want Taiwan. And when we are, in fact, you know, we've got $1 trillion of our debt held by China, and we're paying China interest. We're paying China to build a navy while we're, in fact, dismantling our own navy, possibly to the size of a U.S. Navy before World War One. I mean, if in fact these cuts, because the Super Committee did not take its action, are imposed on the military, we're headed backwards, and we're funding China to build a bigger military. Eventually, China's going to step in and say, we want Taiwan.
Let's go now to Chris in New Orleans, first-time caller. Chris, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Corsi.
Yeah.
General Schwarzkopf said that his biggest fear was that Saddam had one of the unaccounted-for ex-Soviet nuclear weapons planted out in the desert that he would detonate when American troops rolled over it. Do you think that Iran may possibly have one of the unaccounted-for nuclear weapons now? And do you think that Barry Sotaro, a.k.a. Barack Hussein Obama, the illegitimate president illegally occupying the White House, who attended Muslim madras schools for 6 to 8 of his early formative years, do you think that he poses an imminent threat to America, in that our enemy will view one of their own illegally occupying the office of commander-in-chief as a window of opportunity to use such a weapon, knowing that they can expect, at the very least, a buffered response? And do you think that this endangers the American people?
Well, all the assumptions you got in your question we could probably take the rest of the entire show sorting out.
And Jerry, let me just quickly say that until he is proven to be the illegitimate president of the United States, it's a claim that's unfounded, even though I know you've done research into the birth certificate.
I've done lots of research. I've written a book, Where's the Birth Certificate? But I think that's aside from our major theme tonight, George. I think the fact is that we don't know whether Iran has nuclear weapons today or not. Iran has said they want to develop their own nuclear weapons. And I think that's the track Iran is on. Iran doesn't want to have just one nuclear weapon or two nuclear weapons. They want to have a nuclear industry. And Iran is claiming the right under the Non-Proliferation Treaty to have peaceful applications of nuclear power, which they're certainly entitled to. What's happened in recent months, especially with the most recent International Atomic Energy Report, is that it's pretty clear now that Iran isn't involved in a military nuclear program. I don't think anyone doubts that anymore. And that has changed the equation. This IAEA report that came out in the past few weeks has also ratcheted up the worldwide tension over Iran. Again, another factor I think is going to mean something has to come to a head and happen. And since Iran is not going to engage in negotiations, I don't see negotiations working with Iran. We're probably headed towards an accelerated path for Iran to get nuclear weapons and possibly even to use them, or Israel to do a preemptive strike on Iran, worried that Iran may use weapons if they develop them. This is a formula for disaster, and I've been saying and trying to prevent this formula from developing since I wrote Atomic Iran in 2005.
And George, we've investigated
about it endlessly.
Absolutely. Do you trust the Iranian government right now?
No, I don't, George, but, you know, it's hard to trust any of the governments in the Middle East. I mean, again, it's hard to even know what the government of Israel is doing in terms of there have been cyber attacks on the Iranian nuclear program, which have been very devastating, and those could have originated out of Israel as well. It's very hard to know what the countries are doing right now because the countries, Israel and Iran, are heading into deeper secrecy, which, again, I think is part of a prelude to the fact that they're preparing for war.
All right, next up, let's go to our international line. Katie in Toronto. Go ahead, Katie.
Hi, thanks.
Sure.
Doctor, I was actually just calling to see, first of all, I had a question. My question was, if Israel did actually do a preemptive strike, do you think the United States would back them? And my comment sort of question is, I'm wondering what you think of the idea that President Obama is actually a mole working for our enemy, if his intentions are actually to keep the United States at bay so that our enemy can get their ducks in a row. Just wondering what you thought of that.
Well, I've been very critical of President Obama. I've researched him hard. Remember, I researched George W. Bush hard.
That's right.
I wrote the late, great USA on Bush's immigration policies. I'm not going to jump to a conclusion that President Obama is working against the interests of the United States. I don't think we have evidence to justify that. I do think that when you take a look at where Iran is headed, where to say a preemptive strike by Israel is a good idea, is not a statement I'm going to make. I think it's going to be a very disastrous war. A war in the Middle East is not like a board game or it's not a video game. Once Israel were to launch an attack on Iran, first of all, it's not clear it would succeed. The distances are large. The attack would be very difficult. Iran would retaliate. It would very quickly go into a larger regional war, and it's not clear that the United States would support Israel. Not because Obama's a mole or a secret Muslim.
No,
it's just because in the complications of foreign policy, the Obama administration has not been as close to Israel's previous administration. And I don't think anyone is going to support a preemptive strike by either side to cause a war that is unpredictable in its consequences.
And the president may have made some monumental mistakes. He may be a globalist. He may support a one-world government. Who knows? But I too, Jerry, don't think he's a mole.
Well, I think we've got to be very careful. The President of the United States deserves respect whether or not we like them. The office deserves respect. You salute the office whether you like the officer or not. And we've got to be very careful in conclusions we draw, even though a person like me, I investigate hard and I research hard, but let's be responsible and not call President Obama names that we can't fully prove and justify the case. I think President Obama is trying to do a good job. This is a very complicated situation, and it's not clear what a good job is.
And keep in mind, people didn't like George Bush so much, they voted for Barack Obama, and they wanted that kind of change, which we never got, but that'll tell you what they thought of the other administration.
And George, you'll remember that I was critical of George W. Bush going back to 2005,
yes,
when
were.
Condoleezza Rice, in the second term, decided to negotiate with Iran through the EU and the IAEA. And I said at the time that was not going to work. It didn't work. And so, you know, I've been equally critical of George W. Bush and Barack Obama, but I want to say in fairness, there is no easy solution to these problems in the Middle East. And with Iran now pushing for nuclear weapons and Israel feeling a Holocaust-like threat coming on them, the danger of a large regional war that could expand into a world war are coming upon us. It feels increasingly to me like we're in the period 1914, in the prelude to what could become a massive, not only economic collapse, but world war starting in the Middle East.
Jerry, explain something for us in terms of countries that have nuclear weapons. I mean, here we have India, Pakistan, we have Israel, we have Britain, we have China, we have Russia, we have North Korea. I mean, so you have a lot of countries out there that we don't get along with. So what's wrong with the Iranians having it? I'm playing the devil's advocate here.
The Iranians have and can make that argument. And in fact, there are many within the State Department and the Obama administration who feel that we could contain a nuclear-armed Iran, just like we contained nuclear-armed Soviet Union going back into the late 1950s through the 60s. The concern I have is that as more states get nuclear weapons, the odds increase that one of these states will be a rogue actor and will not use nuclear weapons responsibly or be contained by the normal threat of extinction that was the critical element in the containment strategy George Kennan devised in the 1950s for Russia.
Well, but I got to tell you, Jerry, if anybody sells off a nuke to a group or some other rogue area, it's going to be the Russian mob. They've got access, they've got power, they've got money. They can do that.
Well, or rogue actors. We've had North Korea be involved. We've had Pakistan has had rogue agents selling nuclear technology throughout the world. The black market of nuclear technology and the interest. You know, if Iran does get a nuclear weapon, you can bet immediately there's going to be half a dozen other countries in the Middle East that claim the right to have them and will pursue them, including Egypt and very possibly Saudi Arabia. And that proliferation within the Middle East, which historically has been a powder keg, is not going to be a formula for avoiding nuclear war.
I agree. Let's go to Jack, Mankato, Minnesota. Hey, Jack, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you, Doctor, for taking my call. I have a comment and then a question. And
all right.
I really don't understand as an old fart here in the country. First of all, I agree with you, Doctor. I don't care if the president's name is Bill Jones. The position itself commands and demands respect from the position of the people in the United States because he is our president. Secondly,
correct.
And I don't understand this, and is it an EMP, electronic magnetic pulse?
That's what it is.
Yes.
If someone were to fire a nuclear weapon over the United States in the atmosphere, stratosphere that releases this, what is the appropriate response for something like that rather than an actual nuclear weapon that hits one of our cities?
Well, it would be
I'll hold on and listen.
First of all, an EMP attack, if it succeeded, would be crippling because it would wipe out all the electronics, all the electricity, all the communications. It's not even clear we could retaliate with a nuclear weapons attack if we wanted to. The problem with a lot of these really kind of attacks that are asymmetric, you know, like we have the attack on the World Trade Center. Well, we immediately want to retaliate, but who? do we retaliate against? And the argument is still ongoing whether George W. Bush was appropriate in retaliating against, including Iraq, not just limiting the retaliation to Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. So it's very hard to know who to retaliate against. And if we had an EMP attack, we'd probably be crippled and not able to respond for a considerable period of time. And yet we have not done very much in the United States to evaluate how to prepare or defend against an EMP attack. I continue to think it's a real threat and one we have not taken seriously enough.
We've got Jack now in Flint, Michigan. Go ahead, Jack. You're on with Jerry Corsi. Jack, go ahead.
Yes. Okay. Historically, Jerome, isn't it true, and this is based on the interviews that I've heard with Stan Monteith, Radio Liberty,
right,
and also Alex's colleague, Tex Mars, Conspiracy World, and that's conspiracyworld.com.
Right.
Now, isn't it true that the Central Insurrection Agency, which John F. Kennedy, according to Mark Blaine, who was interviewed recently, had planned to terminate because historically, as we have, as is well established, such as in, Iraq, Libya, Iran, where the CIA did, in fact, topple the existing democratically elected leaders and replace them with international bankster, gangster, Bilderberg, Club of Rome, CFR, trilateralist puppet leaders who would do whatever was in the best interest of its masters, including this thing called order out of chaos. We have to create.
And they did the same thing in South Vietnam.
Yes, of course. And it's always, as you said, George, that explosion, or was it Jerry? The explosion there is not just your ordinary explosion, nor was the Twin Towers, right? Judy Wood, where did the Twin Towers go? Even Jesse Ventura says, yeah, it wasn't just nanothermite. That's not going to vaporize 1,100 Americans with no DNA recovery. Okay, so what we see here, who benefits, right? And again, we historically have witnessed that when the international bankster, gangster thugs bring the world to the precipice of a global economic meltdown, what happens? Oh, somebody, some boogeyman shows up, right?
Let's get your comments, Jerry. 30 seconds left.
Again, there's so much there. Mark Lane's just written a new book on the CIA's involvement
in the
Kennedy assassination. And just a limit on Kennedy. I mean, Kennedy, you'll recall, gave a very famous speech just before he was assassinated, at the Waldorf Astoria, where he warned about secret societies. Kennedy was definitely, after he fired Allen Dulles, and he was threatening to break up the CIA into 1,000 pieces. And I've always believed that Kennedy would not have gone into Vietnam as extensively as Lyndon Johnson did, that Kennedy was pulling out of Vietnam. At any rate, the intelligence agency aspects of these crises add a dimension to it, which is more secret and more, I think, nefarious and difficult to figure out and understand. The KGB also often works hand-in-hand with the CIA, and they all cooperate with international crime and drug dealers worldwide.
Well, let's find out, Jerry, if our predictions come true. Jerry's website's all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. I really think you should go and take a look at some of the things he has worked on. Thanks, Jerry. We will be back in a moment with Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor and head of the Enterprise Mission.com.